Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. How's everybody doing out there? Welcome to Tragedy and Hope with my excellent co-host, the one and only Richard Grove. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Maria, and hello, everyone listening.
And a happy springtime to you. Is it springtime where you are?
Finally, it's getting warm out. Although I don't have a whole lot of time to go outside. I've been pretty busy lately, but I see that it's getting warm out and I'm going to have to mow grass or something like that soon. So I look forward to it.
Well, we had spring and then winter came back for 2 days. So they're telling us the weather is normal, as I'm sure Denver is inundated with snow today. But now they're predicting huge amounts of hurricanes, a big hurricane season, at least 18. And they're saying with something like a 70% chance one will hit the mainland. So, you know, I got to tell you, I always believe who calls the weather creates the weather.
Well, I mean, meteorology is a very complex science. And I think what it brings to the forefront of people's minds is the prioritization in our actions and our habits to do things that allow us to survive during those situations, whether it's, having access to clean water and fresh food or heat or, you know, any of these other things that you might need in various storm emergencies. I think it also has to do with knowing your neighbors and what you can do together to prepare and to help each other out. Because as you see from various, you know, disasters like Katrina and more that we've had recently with some of the blizzards, the government's job is not to come help you. It's not their priority to make sure that you're alive and that your family is safe. That has to be your priority, and you got to prepare for that before those things happen. So it just the idea of self-reliance has been bred out of Americans so much, and we live in these little terrarium lifestyles where we aren't really in touch with the real acts of nature that allow survival. You know, and
right.
that has to do with finding fresh water, staying out of the direct sunlight, you know, building shelter. All these various things that you need to do to survive, maybe making some fire. I don't know. These are things that are kind of foreign and alien, and that you only see on some, you know, National Geographic show about some guy who goes and gets dropped off someplace, when that really could happen in any of our towns. And I think it's, you know, important in these weather, turmoil, disaster situations to keep our heads, not to panic, and to ensure clear communication with your neighbors and be empathetic. It's a survival situation for everyone, and some people will be panicked. So be prepared likewise.
Right, absolutely. Well, I always suggest people at least have, 1 to 2 weeks worth of what they need in their house, just in case something like that happens. I mean, you look at what happened after Hurricane Sandy, and it surely wasn't pretty.
Well, I think that's tough for people to do, because a lot of people are, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, or many people are unemployed and don't even have paychecks, or, you know, the idea is a far too limited budget for survival. But when you start to think about these things and plan and prioritize for them, you might watch a little bit less cable TV or go to one less, eating something that is a little more extravagant than what you really just need to get by. And, you know, prioritize for just in case. You should have some food and you should have some water, and you should know some people who might have a generator and these sort of things. You know, just, you know, figure out what you have and what's around you and take what you have and make what you want.
Right. Well, I think people have lost the understanding of what the word neighbor and neighborhood means, and community, and the word commune being in the word community.
Well, it's hard to commune through TV.
You know, I don't know how it is where you live, but here in Arizona, when you pull into your house, you pull into your driveway, which is right in front of your house, right into your garage, and most homes are surrounded by a concrete wall, so you never see nor interact with your neighbor.
And you don't feel safe even with that wall, because you don't have any knowledge, and so there's all these unknowns that are going to persist as fear until you take the trouble to do a little learning, introduce yourself. Find out which of your neighbors are friendly, which ones aren't. Hey, maybe we'll make dinner once a week, and it can rotate through the neighborhood, and, you know, just get to know each other again, because the television culture of the last 50 or 60 years has greatly divided and conquered our country. And it's a very simple, formula of taking away the habitual time that used to be spent, I don't know, washing your car or doing your garden or any of these things where you might bump into your neighbors outside. And instead, people go home from work, they turn off their fake TV that they use to protect their house when they're gone, and they turn on their real TV, and they sit there for 6 or 8 hours until they fall asleep. Then they get up and go to work. I know I'm repeating something that people relate to out there. The question is, how does that benefit you, and why haven't you engaged in some alternative activities that might lead to something that helps you with your priorities in life?
Right. Well, I was reading an article, I think it was on Alternet, something along the lines of why Americans are so ignorant nowadays. And one of the points the article made, and they made plenty, it had a lot to do with the fact that Americans never think outside themselves. If it doesn't personally affect them, they don't even study it or care about it. And of course, I'm talking about, you know, world news, world events. And he talks about, you know, being born on such a large continent that we tend to think this is all there is. And, oh, if that's happening in this place, it's not bothering me. So we tend to be, I guess, we walk around with our heads facing the floor.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that America has some problems, and problems indicate that learning has yet to take place in order to find those solutions. One of the observations we can start with is that Americans, as a general rule, they no longer have a value for honesty. They no longer, you know, find value from truth or reality. Instead, their belief in deception makes them, you know, subservient to someone else's wishes. So without a metric for truth, it is very hard to think. I wouldn't want to think if there weren't some point and some answer that you could reach through observation, identification, organization, and then the communication to other people. So people think that it's easier to be a slave, and they're proud to be peasants and serfs, and they love their servitude. And that's the end of America. It doesn't have to end there. We can start by looking around ourselves and seeing that, you know, history really is interesting, but not from watching TV. You're not going to get that from watching TV. They think history's, you know, just not good enough. Let's just make some crap up and call it, you know, Lincoln or Spartacus or this new show Da Vinci, which all decontextualize history to break the chain of cause and effect so that you're learning about real people from history, but you're learning fake stories that are absolutely useless and really don't teach any lessons. So it's a waste of our time.
Well, and then you have the other waste of time, which is people getting all uppity and hot and under the collar about these hot button issues that they continually throw at us as a distraction. So people get emotional. You know, if you can stir their emotions about things, you know, they're right away going to go nuts, and that's what they're going to focus on. But they don't understand. It's the old shell game.
Well, that stimulus reaction, and that plays out until you learn to put thinking between the stimulus and your reaction. So what one of these hot button topics, is bringing people to emotional forefronts these days. This term called, this phrase called gun control. I don't know. I've never had any problem with gun control. That, like, guns don't do things by themselves. I have a problem with people control. I have a problem with irrational people out there using violence instead of logic and reason to convince other people to go along. You know, if you use force, fraud, coercion, any type of violence, it means you're intellectually bankrupt. It means you don't have a reason. Otherwise, you wouldn't need to use force. So as long as we keep justifying force, and that is another theme throughout our media, especially TV, is the mixing of sex and violence. You know, it's like terror porn that they put together, all these different shows. So you just need, once you understand what you're being shown, you can separate yourself and you can consider it and no longer have to accept it with the suspension of disbelief that traditionally comes along with watching television and films. Once you become a critical thinker and start inquiring into who's writing this, who's paying for it, you know, who's setting up the set to have these different symbols, who's, you know, incorporating these other themes that are not history, and what is their purpose? Why are they showing this to us? Why do they find it so profitable to load us with unfacts and unrealities? Well, I'll tell you, because the most valuable thing that you have is your rights as an individual, your right to life, the right to property that comes from that, and all these different things that follow as derivatives. They, you know, the people that control things, the people who plunder those who produce, they want control over your human resources. They want you to be working for them, not yourself. So the real power that I try to impart to people when I speak is that as an individual, that's where your power lies. Your power isn't in getting into groups of other people who don't think for themselves and don't use existence as their metric for truth and standard for reality. Rather, those people traditionally seek to use authority, experts, beliefs, other things instead of that which exists.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you talk about gun control, because I only see it as control. And Jim Fetzer and I actually did a good half hour on that yesterday, which was quite excellent. But right after the show, it's kind of interesting because when I was surfing the news, I saw the college student in Texas that had stabbed 14 kids because his fantasy, supposedly, his fantasy his whole life was to go on a slashing spree. So, you know, the first thought I had, the first posting I put up was, you know, are they going to, you know, pass knife control laws?
Well, there's the stabbing in China. There's a stabbing in Texas where multiple people, you know, between, you know, 10 and 20 people in both cases are being adversely affected by someone in their environment because they didn't, you know, it's kind of unusual if you think about it, that people cluster together with people they don't know and they let down their guards, like whether it be in a movie theater, a restaurant. You know, people who come here from outside the country always remark to me, it's weird how so many people densely packed together and nobody's nervous about it. We all just kind of turn off our survival, you know, instincts. And I think that's what it's about. The gun control debate or any of these other weapon debates are all about denying you your right to life, liberty, and property. A gun is a piece of property. It's a tool used for survival. And if you don't have the right to that property, then you really don't have the right to your life, which means you're under the influence of collectivism. And if you believe that without resisting, that is slavery. If you at least understand it enough to know that you want to escape that using logic and reason, now you're a prisoner trying to break out. And the rope I'm throwing over the wall doesn't look like a noose to you. It looks like, hey, I could climb over the wall with this if I hang on to it and start pulling myself up.
Well, you know, that's a really good point you made, you know, and that's something to really think about, is why do we suspend our survival instincts when we're walking through a crowded mall or sitting in a crowded movie theater? Do we just assume that we're safe or everybody's there just to enjoy a film together?
I think even the latest stabbing, the person was stopped by someone with a taser. So the fact that, there, you know, if there wasn't a taser there, a 15th, a 16th, a 17th, 18th, you know, 20th, 25th person might have gotten stabbed because obviously, people lack not only the intellectual self-defense to be aware in those situations and to think critically and to communicate with others that there is danger present and we must protect ourselves, we're being plundered, and the physical self-defense that comes with disarming somebody who doesn't know any more than to threaten you with a weapon because they're not, you know, at least someone who's educated enough to defend themselves from having their gun taken away from them, for instance, that's a worthy opponent. But when someone points a gun at you in a crowded, or not a crowded, like a lone alley, and you have the knowledge of how to take that weapon away and what position you need to be in to strike, and they don't, you have an intellectual advantage. So even though you don't have the physical self-defense, you might have the intellectual self-defense or psychological self-defense to be able to get through that situation, even though you are unarmed. So I think of, you know, learning how to use your mind is a form of self-defense. It is a form of arming yourself against those who wish to plunder your life, liberty, and property. And it's one of the few things that we can do that is pretty much unrestricted. So they're not even trying. Well, they're trying to destroy the school system, but the school system was destroyed by design in the first place. So right. We have critical thinking on our side that we can learn to use.
Right. Well, in actuality, you know, I think about it, if they're trying to destroy the school system, can that really be a bad thing?
Well, I think that, you know, they don't seek to create, they don't seek to destroy the school system for the same reason that we've observed that it's destroyed itself. It destroyed itself when it no longer became education to individuals and became taking individuals and collectivizing them into a corporate society for a fascist or a socialist state where you no longer have the rights of an individual. That is someone else 100% having ownership over your human resources. And the least we can do as human beings is learn how to effectively resist. Because this is a repeating theme through history, and you know, people's children, grandchildren, future generations are going to continue to struggle with these problems unless we step up and start to process some of this information that we have available and do creative and constructive and productive things with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, sometimes I find, you know, when you do talk about something that is true, you know, something real, people get really pissed off.
Well, they should, because
in their la-la land.
They should get pissed off, and they externalize it towards whoever's there. But really, they're upset with themselves for not having taken the time to learn, you know, even though they've had all the opportunity in the world to go and use the internet for learning, they've used it for Hulu and all these other things. It's like people are upset with themselves because they know that they have a responsibility as an adult to understand the systems and tools with which they participate in life. And yet, if you look around, you're participating in voting, you don't understand the voting system or the political system, and it doesn't really represent what you think it does anyway. You believe in the economic system, but you have no idea about the creation of money or the gold price fixing that goes on every day on the property of Rothschild in London. So it's like, We participate in all these things that we don't understand, and that is the folly of our lives. But it doesn't have to be that way. It's only that way until you take the time to listen to the words, think about them yourselves, and start inquiring and finding your own answers. And by doing that methodically, you can do it a lot more consistently with high degrees of certainty. And that does bring joy and serenity to life, because it removes the frustration, or at least when you have frustration, it's a learning experience that leads to something that's not so frustrating.
Right, right. Well, so many, I'm sure you hear it too, but so many of my listeners, you know, through the years, have commented that, you know, they have the tools to understand the news. They get, you know, the reality of what's going on. And they're happy about it, even though it's, you know, it's very sad and impactful to first learn that pretty much everything you ever learned was a lie. They're grateful for the knowledge, and it sets them off on their own journey of reading books and doing, you know, what they need to do for themselves.
Well, I just want to make one, the observation that came to mind is, it's not that everything that you've ever learned is a lie. I would bet that everything you've ever truly learned is true. Because you've gone through the process of observation, identification, comparison and contrast. You then organize that and remove that which, you know, is not a reality. You remove the myths and the factoids and this sort of thing. And then you're left with a learning process. So it's only like that until you learn to start to use your mind in a constructive way that is not how they've taught us. So when we went to school, yes, we went through 15,000 hours of public training and conditioning to believe that we should not resist tyranny in all its forms. That's it. We did not ask questions and find answers on our own. We were presented with answers and forced basically to recite back these answers, whether by filling in the dots or writing out the essay. That's right. Not education. So don't be upset that you have to unlearn that stuff, because you didn't learn it in the first place. That was programming. You now, for the first time in your life, maybe are getting the opportunity to learn for yourself and to actually follow your pursuits of bliss. Follow the things that are interesting to you. What do you participate in all day? Go and find out the history from where that came. And I guarantee you're going to learn something interesting. And it's not something that they included in your college course about that profession, for instance.
Right, right. Well, I could tell you, I think the most important things I learned going through the New York City school system was how to survive. I think that really was, when you talked about having intellectual defense. I mean, that was one way, even as a, you know, probably I'd say junior high school, where things start getting ugly. And, you know, we'd have all kinds of riots and gang fights and whatnot after school. And, you know, for whatever reason, a lot of the bullies would, you know, prearrange and pre-warn me ahead of time that when school got out, they were going to kick my ass. So that gave me the time to figure out how to psych them out of doing that just with words. And you know, I guess I always thought they were beneath me as far as their intellect and their intelligence level, which I still believe. And you know, I was always able to dissuade them by taking their minds right off it. I mean, you know, while their fists were like 2 inches away from my face.
That's something
I learned growing up in New York.
Well, I mean, and then that's teaching you that the bully needs your fear, the bully needs your panic, and the bully cannot tolerate your thinking. And that's what you're noticing. In junior high, kids have had enough programming through TV, through watching their parents with their drama at home, that they can now start to act out these things for themselves so that they can try to be adult. How do they try to be adult? Well, they find their little, you know, place in the caste system that school creates, and they play out the roles. That wasn't the first bully to ever, you know, walk the hallways of a school. He or she had been bullied before, and there were older kids, and this cycle continues to perpetrate itself through the school system until if you have kids involuntarily being grouped together and engaging in activities that go against all the tendencies of a child's curiosity and nature to explore and ask questions. No, you won't have any of that within these walls, you know, from 9 to 3 every day. And you'll be taken away from your parents, and you'll be taught that the state is your authority and not your mind, not your ability to reason, not that which exists, but whatever the teacher tells you it is. That is anti-learning. That's programming. That's brainwashing. Those are things that are harmful to children and that we should consider. Even though we've been through that abuse system, we should stop and consider, what are the origins? What are their true functions? What is the school system actually producing? And what are the people, like, who are the people that created all these policies that are top down being, you know, manifested all over the world? What is their goal? And then you couldn't deny conspiracy exists, because you would see the organizational nature and the lack of resistance to it that allows, you know, the people that are the non-elected rulers to propagate their will all over the world without resistance, without much organized resistance yet, I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you had it yet. But, you know, that skill is something that people really do need to learn, because I don't know, maybe we're just hearing more of it because of the internet, but it seems like bullying is on the rise. Certainly rape amongst our children is on the rise, almost to the point where it looks epidemic. And then you find, you know, these 16, 17-year-old victims of rape, you know, committing suicide because they get, you know, to feel like they did something wrong, or they get exposed on Twitter or wherever. It kind of makes you think, you know, what in the hell is happening to this world?
Well, we could blame the kids, or I could ask the question, would parents who have intellectual and physical self-defense send their child out into a world of predators unprepared? And the answer is likely no. So why aren't kids demonstrating the skills of intellectual and physical self-defense? Oh, because their parents who claim that they're adults never have taken the work it takes, the time, the effort to figure these things out, to instill these characteristics in themselves, and to pass these on to their children before they're allowed to go outside to a public school or any place else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think that just demonstrates that as long as your kid has more books than you do, you might be in a form of extended adolescence. You know, you might have a little work to do. If your child has more books than you, then you should consider why that is and why you are where you are.
All
because
right.
The books contain knowledge and wisdom if you know how to source them properly. There's a lot of noise out there. Basically, any book of value is not at Barnes & Noble. You've actually got to look into the subjects, find the source materials, and then try to understand, because the people who are running this place, they've inherited their wealth. They've inherited their position because their parents did something, you know, to help the system and, you know, help the empire or whatever. So, you know, they don't necessarily have their position because of knowledge and aptitude and intellectual skill or even intellectual aptitude. They can be intellectually bankrupt and still have very much power as long as there's no one else around intellectually to resist.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you also have to look at, you know, and I'm certainly not saying bad parenting isn't part of the reason, but you also have to look at the systematic destruction of our economy, which forces most parents, if kids are lucky enough to have two at home, not many do, that are out there working their asses off, you know, a lot of times two or three jobs, just trying to keep up so they, you know, they have no time to spend with their kids. So it's like the whole system is set up for failure, unless you're, you know, really old school.
Well, the whole system is set up for failure unless you take it upon yourself to start considering what I'm saying and thinking about maybe integrating it into your planning for the future. You obviously can't do any of this stuff right now. You can only say, well, that's a valuable idea worth investing some of my time and effort in. I'm going to go check it out for myself and then see what other resources are available. I mean, what I do as far as the Peace Revolution podcast is part of my edification for knowledge and wanting to know the answers to these questions. And when I find useful things that all, you know, tell a story, you put them together and then you change out of that consumer mentality where you're just taking in information and now you're reflecting it back out. That's what you do. That's what I do. It's what many other independent artists and media hosts do, because we are seeking to be the change that we see needs to be out there in the world. But we can't wait for corporations or politicians to ever want to meet our needs. They won't even meet us personally. How could they ever meet my needs? How could you trust somebody that you've never met to choose your dinner tonight, let alone the foreign policy of this country to which you were obligated to pay into the taxes? I think if we're going to be enslaved to paying into taxes, then we at least should have some say on how those taxes are used. And it should be in a logical prioritization of what Americans need. We're the ones paying taxes. Shouldn't those needs be addressing our needs before addressing the needs of some other country that may have questionable motives? I mean, all the time, money is just flying out of this country. Money's going to the TARP bailouts and all these different people, but we have no control. I think that's the sign that so much money gets fleeced off the American public, and yet we have so little say in having our needs met. I think, you know, if you can't read that as tyranny on the wall, then you need to go back and check your ABCs.
Right. Right. Well, you're absolutely right. You know, you look at the economic situation of this country, and then you look at, you know, with the supposed threat from North Korea, you know, and the only place it seems these threats are being reported is in American newspaper, kind of interesting. And look at how they justified immediately 14 more bases around the world and in the country. And all the money immediately starting to send out these big warships, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they always seem to have, it's like a miracle. And I think most Americans think that's not our money going out, you know, going out to sea.
Oh, it's not your money. It's somebody else's money. Your money went to good things. Your money didn't go to smuggling children or, you know, the whole smuggling of arms, you know, Fast and Furious. And then it didn't go to any of that. It didn't go to any of these covert operations for mind control and the CIA. It didn't go to that stuff. It went to the good, wholesome roads that you drive on. Keep believing that. That's not the truth. It's easy to find out what the truth is, but you have to open your eyes and look. And people have to start using their minds as their primary tool of survival, not believing in communism or socialism, because anything that takes away your property and your liberty is dependent on taking away your life. It just needs to do it in a slow manner in order to maintain control. And so these ideas about North Korea or any, I'm not scared of that. I don't think of the, look, the problem we have here is a philosophical problem across the planet. It's the belief that some people can plunder the production of others without resistance. It's the belief that you don't have the right to your own life or to your own property or to your own liberty. You don't, you can work, but you can't be free. Right. So it's like you can do all the work of living, but you won't be able to be free with that because they're going to, you know, do all these other things to make sure that you're not free. And it's supposed to be tolerated because that's just how it is. And as it gets incrementally worse, people just grin and bear it, grin and bear it. Well, there's something that you can do. You can stop being the sucker at the shell game table, at the three card money table, and you can walk away and do something else with your time. They need you to be habitually addicted to their system. They don't want you using your own mind on your own time for your own goals. So the moment we can change our habits and move away from all the things that disempower us, and one of those habits is thinking. Put thinking back in the stimulus and response. Question everything. If it's valid, there's no problem. You'll find the knowledge easily enough. If not, if it's a little murky, if the facts of the event are being obscured, if there is a mass shooting or something like that and you can't find, you know, the ballistics and all this evidence that should be there from any investigation, then you know you're dealing with nonsense. It's hypothetical realities. It's psychological warfare. If the facts of the basic who, what, when, where, why, and how are obscured, you know you're dealing with psychological warfare. Walk away from that. There's nothing to be gained there unless you study psychological warfare and want to learn about it.
Absolutely. I have to agree. So when you're talking about, you know, thinking, you know, I look at people everywhere. Okay. And everybody's connected to something. All right. They've either got a headset on, they're texting, you know, they've got this gadget, that gadget, in their cars. You know, I don't know if you saw, there was a helicopter, commercial helicopter that crashed this week because the driver was texting. And I don't know, I think something like 12 people died or something like that. Do you think that all these convenience tools we have were also deliberately put in our hands to prevent us from thinking?
Absolutely. They're diversion. And you can tell by how all the different operating systems are being dumbed down so they can be merged in a push button, you know, picture system. So you don't have any real control over your computer and all your privacy is just out there and you just sign in the way as soon as you start using the tablet. So these are the things that, you know, Neil Postman was talking about when he was talking about technology. And every time you have something new that's an improvement, it also takes something away. So human connectivity, that's a great thing. But the priority and what you get from that connection, I think people should be connected to other people and books and sources of knowledge and not be connected to fictional programming and entertaining and all these other things, because it's not entertaining if it doesn't lead you to learning how to live your life, you know, more in line with how you want to live it and where you want to be. If it doesn't help you attain your goals, it's useless. It's noise. They have made a profession, many, many professions, many billions of dollars in these professions, of creating noise. Whether it's the slot machine for your tablet application or any of these things that people have out there, I just, you know, I'm always in such a struggle for survival and trying to, you know, get to a place where I'm comfortable and can be self-sufficient and, you know, self-reliant, that I don't have time to look at that stuff unless it has some intrinsic benefit that where you can learn how to live life better or live life longer or, you know, survive in a crazy situation or whatever. Because our minds are all about learning. What is learning? Learning is simply asking, what is the identity of the place? What is the identity of the person? What is the identity of the time? All those five W's plus how, it's the question, what is the identity of blank? And right. Once you answer those things, that the process of doing that is thinking. That is reason. We are not taught that in schools. And so people go around thinking that they have critical thinking and reason when that's a process. And you have to use your five senses, go through the law of identity, which is identification of all these different things that used to be part of journalism. Any story or article would tell you these 6 points, and that is what makes knowledge. It's the cross-section. It's the connection, the connectivity of the who, what, when, where, why, and how that allows people to say, oh, that's actually a piece of knowledge. And so without a standard for knowledge, without a standard for truth, without a standard for reality, we are easily deceived. We believe nonsense. And that is how psychological warfare is effective.
Right. And, you know, many other countries on Earth know that America is probably the largest psyop ever pulled off on a human race before. And, you know, it seems everybody knows it except most Americans. Rich, we're going to go to a short break, and I'm going to ask my audience, our audience, of course, to stay with us. Richard and I will be right back. Okay, welcome back to Tragedy and Hope with my co-host, Richard Grove. Check out Richard's work at peacerevolution.org, tragedyandhope.com. Pretty impressive stuff on your pages there, Rich. I see you were interviewed by RT. How did that go?
That went really well. It was my first time doing an interview that, you know, RT, I didn't know till afterwards, and it was a good thing because, you know, I knew that they were owned by the Russian government and I should, you know, go, you know, not talk about any Russian gangsters. That would probably be a good idea, that sort of thing. And, you know, I went to the wiki page afterwards and they serve an audience around the world of like 500 million people. And they're like the number two news show in Britain. And so it's heavily watched all over the world. I thought, you know, there's just a bunch of Americans tuning in, and that's kind of the angle we see. But when you find out that it goes out to that many people, I was just glad that it was a 10-minute interview. It was short and sweet. I was able to answer the questions. I think the interview aspect of all this stuff is much easier than any of the other work that I do, because at least in the interview, it's just someone asking you questions. I can answer questions. If I don't know the answer, I'll say I don't know the answer, or I'll think through it on the air or whatever. That's not a big deal. The big deal is trying to be so organized as to produce a show, such as some of the things you see on the front cover of tragedyandhope.com right now. We're about to produce a show tonight, less than 2 hours from now, a History Connected episode that takes the history of MKUltra and the history of public schooling in America and shows you that there's many of the same financiers and people in control, and it's a very interesting picture. So I'm inviting Jan Irvin from Gnostic Media and Kevin Cole, who recently did the Trivium presentation on tragedyandhope.com, to participate, and we're going to overlay our maps of reality. And there, I already know ahead of time that there are several people that overlap. I don't know if Jan or Kevin know that yet, but that's why I wanted to have this episode, because in talking to each of them respectively about their research, I kept hearing similar names. I was like, you guys, we have to talk and get this all out there. So that's what we'll be doing this evening.
Wow. Sounds great. So, you know, more reason for people listening. And I don't want to, you know, preach into the choir to my audience, because I know they do participate in my co-host's work as well. But for people that aren't, you know, usual to the show, you know, you're missing out on a lot. And, you know, this is another choice people have, Richard. You know, last week this young blonde on CNN came out and admitted basically that she was told or coerced into demonizing Syria and Iran on the air. And, you know, I'm sure she lost her job. people have to also understand, you know, and every now and then I'll post it up on, you know, Nazi Facebook. You know, if you're supporting mass media, you're part of the problem. I mean, it's that simple. Okay. So if people are getting their news and, you know, buying TV to have CNN and all these other stations lie to them instead of supporting people like myself, you, other co-hosts, other guests, both of us have had, they have to come to terms with they're part of the problem. You know, and I'm finding more and more people complaining to me about the lack of integrity of other people that they either followed or believed in or whatever. And, you know, you always have to, like you said, you have to think, you got to do the homework. You know, you need to look at whose corporate line are they towing when they're talking to you. You know, where's the money coming from? All of that is very important.
I can't understand how all those news stations all say the same thing. I mean, I understand. I totally understand now. But, you know, people don't get that. They're just like, well, that must be the news because all the stations said it the same way. No, that's a sign of untruth. That's an unreality. Life doesn't happen that clearly. There are different perspectives, and that's part of what history is about. History is written by the victors, the people that crushed the other people who you probably relate to more. You don't get their story. You only get the story that's handed down by history. So that is a superficial perspective from which you can dig into and find out what is the suppressed side that's, you know, not being considered. Because the way they control us is taking away our comparison and contrast. In Latin, it's called the genera and differentia, the things that are the same and the things that are different. This is how we as human beings take our observation, form concepts from our percepts. So the concept of any given thing is based on, you know, something exists and you can tangibly, you know, consciously conceive of it. And then we compare and contrast to find the essence. And that's what a definition is. I think a problem that we have in America, I'll start with the problem I had as a child. I was frustrated with the definition because you had to know how to spell the word in order to find the word. As a child, you hear adults saying words and a lot of them are not phonetic. So the struggle was trying to find the word in a dictionary. As an adult, I think the struggle is since we never learned to define things on our own, to start with identity and definition as our reasoning process demands, without that, we have always taken the definitions of others and simply just accepted them without thinking. And I think that corrupts the initial process of curiosity and learning and true understanding, because it's only by, you know, having these arguments in your mind and asking these questions and finding these answers that you can come to truly appreciate the essence of something and truly be able to communicate it to somebody else without having to repeat the verbatim definition that might be in any given language.
Well, I totally understand. You know, you reminded me. My father used to complain about that all the time. You know, he grew up in Europe and he spoke many languages. And he said that learning English when he came to America was the hardest thing, he said, because your language doesn't make sense. You know, everything else is based on a Latin, you know, a Latin root or, you know, a derivative of this or that. But he said English just doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's because English is an artificially created servant language. And so there's a lot to that. Having studied Latin and looking at how these other languages evolved, you then come across, you know, what comes out to be a couple hundred years later, the British Empire. But when English is taking root through King James and the King James Bible and all these other, you know, literary works that began to circulate to solidify the organic unity of the Britannic language, there is a purpose to that because you can't unify people all over the world unless there's a common language through which they can be controlled. And so they've been working on that. And, you know, this is another line into Kevin Cole's research, because in studying the language and how empire has used language through secret societies to create all these arbitrary ideas that are then accepted as truths, that comes back to the experiment of the New Atlantis, Francis Bacon, and begging the question, what was the original Atlantis? Well, that's something that comes from Plato, and I believe it's in his Republic. So these ideas of utopia were the basis of populating America. So America has always been created as an esoteric occult experiment. What happens if we groom a bunch of people to think they're free, but create a legislative system that means they're really not free and teach them that they're free and they don't know it? And don't give them any context to world history and don't give them access to other languages and these sort of things that are brought about not by individuals in America choosing this as our own life, but heavily because of the British influence that only waned for about, 30 years after the revolution. And then step by step, they not only got a stranglehold, they run us better than they run their own country, because at least people in Britain know that they're run by that system. We here in America are groomed to still think we're free, that there are checks and balances, that anyone can grow up to be president, and you don't have to be related to the British royalty or, any of these sort of things. You don't have to have served the empire in some way. So, there's just a lot of thinking to do. And the sooner we get started on it, the sooner we all start living a life that looks more like something reasonable and logical and rational. And we can step away from all this craziness. Any channel on TV, any news show that you hear out there, there's craziness being expressed, either unrealities or reporting on the reality that is filled with irrationality.
All right. Oh, creating that reality. Let's not leave that one out. When you tell people that, the entire day of September 11th was scripted, they don't want to believe it. I can't believe anybody at this point in time.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that statement only for the fact that that's a conclusion that demands a step-by-step process of reasoning from that which exists. And what I can say, what I can promise to someone who wants to go through that line of questioning, starting with that which exists, you will find a similar conclusion. The story that we're told, the official story, breaks down in its definition and law of identity, because the facts of 9/11, whether it be the hijackers or the alleged planes or any of these things, the five W's plus how of their entities, of their origins, are all obscured. So you don't know who's reporting that these hijackers were there, what the chain of custody was on those videotapes, what the tail numbers and identification methods were for these, airliners. And so when the identity and definition is all in question, they can make up any story. And as long as people don't know to go back and find the essence of what happened, like if you cleared my desk and said, let's talk about 9/11, I would bring in World Trade Center 1, World Trade Center 2, World Trade Center 7, and the Pentagon, and maybe a scorched earth mark in Pennsylvania, if you want to include that. From there, it is very hard to add evidence to the table because people want to add hijackers. Well, do some investigation into that. You want to add airplanes. Do some investigation into that. You want to add in all these other things, and it's like the proof of existence is lacking. Now, I'm not saying they don't exist. What I'm saying at the very least is their existence is being obscured, confused, and that tells me it's psychological warfare, and you must be very careful in thinking before speaking.
Right. Well, a lot of people come to the same conclusion with this shooting at Sandy Hook, the shooting at the theater. Jim Fetzer was talking about that yesterday, is that basically there's no proof of evidence on any of these things. And yet I don't understand, why do Americans just believe the story on face value? Oh, look, Obama's bringing, the survivors of Sandy Hook.
Right. People buy into it because they don't think. Everyone's seen CSI by this point because there's like seven CSI shows or whatever. It's obscene. But what they do when a crime happens is they cordon off the area so as not to infect the crime scene. They then identify each piece of evidence, if it's evidence or not. And then they go through all these forensics. That's like a picturing, it's a visualization of what we should be thinking when these things happen. Sandy Hook, they just had a new security system, all this stuff. Let's see the videotape. Let's hear the 911 call, the new security system should have contacted the police as soon as it was breached. Why was that not the first report of it? Why was it later? There's all these contradictions. There's all this obscured evidence. From there, you can't talk about it anymore because you are literally talking about no thing. Without identification, without identity and definition and artifacts and evidence, you are literally not talking about anything in reality. You have, instead of going through the process of thinking and the work and the journalism of tracking this stuff down, you will engage in the arbitrary ad infinitum because there is no end to it. There is no logical proof that comes out of it when you do not start at what exists. And that is the trick that they play on all these psychological warfare operations. Look, the Colorado shooting, it might have been that guy. He might have been on seven psychotropic drugs, etc. But when they obscure the original findings, the evidence, and discount all the and neglect all these aspects of first person, observations, victims, people who were there, people who saw multiple people there, there's all these contradictions which are just negated. in order to formulate what becomes the government statement. So that's right. False flag terrorism, that's psychological warfare, and people should learn to recognize what it is so they can avoid it.
Right. Well, you know, they did the same thing with that oil spill in Arkansas. They put a no-fly zone over it. And it, you know, pushed reporters away from the area under, you know, threat of arrest.
Well, and the reporters... Yeah. And the reporters respected that and didn't resist because they were told by an authority. And since their governance, their self-governance is not existence, it's not the basis of their reason, authority said to do that stuff. So we should believe that some people have special rights to do stuff to us that we don't have the right to do to them, right? So when it breaks down, when, you know, you go out and it's like, do you have the right to steal from your neighbor? Does your neighbor have the right to steal from you? No. So where do we, you know, if we get a bunch of people together, can we take away someone else's rights? No. They still have the right to life, to property, to liberty, etc. So the attempt to rationalize it is called authority. The fact that a king has a divine right to rule, or that, you know, some Fed chief has the divine right to just, you know, arbitrarily change numbers, or someone can just change the number of gold every day on how much that's worth.
Right.
And so,
right, how crazy is that? I mean, even if they are authorities, they're there because either we put them there or we pay for them to be there.
Or they slink in there like a snake and you're not brave enough to root them out. You'll just continue believing that the snake has the right to be there. That's all. And I'm saying that, you know, you have snakes in suits. You have psychopaths who seek power, who will lie to people, say anything, do whatever to gain those positions of power. Why? Because government is no longer a servant. It's now been pimped out and whored out, and now it's a game of power. It never should have been that way. It was never intended to be that way. But the ilk of people who designed this country waned as education was infected, as self-reliance was bred out of us, as we became dependent on authority to help us meet our needs because we were not being intellectually vigilant in defending ourselves and our families.
Mm. Well, and, you know, people forget that it's supposed to be our duty to be informed citizens, not, you know, our choice or if we feel like it.
Well, I think it's our duty to be informed and to be responsible. I don't think it's our duty to be a citizen, because a citizen means you're no longer an individual and you're part of a collective, to which I never agreed. Never agreed. I don't have a contract, a social contract. I haven't agreed to any of that stuff. I was born into it. I was told it was okay. At some point, I gained enough self-perspective to ask those questions, to be brave enough to spend some time finding the answers.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I totally agree, but, you know, in this country, when you're born, you know, you're immediately issued, you know, the signs that you're chattel, your birth certificate and your social security number.
Well, again, so, that's people engaging in believing in things that they don't understand, that weren't really there to benefit them, because you weren't around when they created that stuff. They didn't even know about you. So it's time that we grew up, left these childlike ideas and started questioning and finding that which exists, because only there are we going to find our solutions. That's where the solutions are. It's at the other end of learning. It's at taking the fear and then asking that fear that you have questions and finding some answers and going through and drawing that out. That's what life is meant to do. It's a learning process. It's a continual classroom. You can take the curriculum or not. That's our free will to think or not to think. That really is the question. But if you ask that question, you actually are thinking. So good for you. So, you know, it doesn't have to be America Crisis by Design. It could be, you know, an American erection of the mind.
All right. Well, you know, talking to you, it's important that I tell you this story I tripped across yesterday. And we've only got 5 minutes, so I wanted to bring it to you. Because, of course, the first thing I thought of was 9/11. I thought of Judy Wood's work. I think Exotic Weapon. And then I see this story that I think most people probably ignored. Navy's new laser weapon blasts the bad guys from air and sea. No longer the fantasy weapon of tomorrow, the U.S. Navy is set to field a powerful laser that can protect its ships by blasting targets with high-intensity light beams.
Every time you say laser, I think of Austin Powers and laser. These guys, there are no enemies. There are no enemies of the United States that like have these big, you know, competitive armies that we're building up. What they're building has practical applications in maintaining the human livestock and the human resources and maintaining their BS, you know, because I don't want to say the real word on the air, But it's a BS way of dealing with people. It is not government by other people. These are people who think that they have superpowers, that they're endowed with special rights that you weren't born into. So sorry for you. You live in the wrong place. No, that's more BS. So that's why we just have to get away from the irrationality of the non-thinkers and start thinking for ourselves. There is no competition. The other side is intellectually bankrupt. There is nothing that is going to justify their irrationality, their murder, their, you know, all these other things that, go on with it. That's all use of force, fraud, and coercion. We can learn our way out of it, but we have to do it by ourselves, but we want to have other people around it, you know, around us doing likewise, because that's the only way we can effectively resist is once everyone else understands and is on the same page, and then we can effectively protect ourselves. But only that only comes once we identify what's going on and who's doing it, where they're doing it, why they're doing it, these other things.
Right.
And so this is a continuous process. You're not going to figure it out in 1 hour or one evening or even 1 week. It's going to be something that you're going to continue to think about, and the answers will come
and
if you ask the questions.
The rest of your life. You know, I've always been a student of life. You know, I can't imagine a day passing without reading a book, without learning something new. And maybe there's something wrong, either very right with me or very wrong with me. But I've been this way since I was a child, and I look back, and when I was in school, I mean, I questioned everything. Richard, I was in trouble all the time with my teachers, and if I was that kid in today's society, I would probably be in a special institution of some sort and drugged to the max just to keep my mouth shut. But if they were teaching something that made no sense, I felt I had the right to question it right then and there in the classroom, and I did.
Well, I think that, you know, something that we don't learn in the classroom is how to respect ourselves. So my message to everybody would be to, you know, part of learning how to respect yourself is learning how to fill your mind with substantial material on knowledge that helps you survive and thrive in this world, and learning how to dismiss the arbitrary noise. And when you encounter that in life, switch to another station, figure out something else to do with your time. That's what I mean by that. Change your habits away from the way that we've been programmed, because we've been programmed in direct conflict with our needs of survival. And that's one of the problems that we can work on every day.
Absolutely. You know, and I mean, you look around, you know, the average American no longer knows even basic skills, how to grow food, how to make clothes, how to sew. You know,
yeah, but the cool thing is you can learn on YouTube. You can learn any of those subjects in like 10 minutes on YouTube and cross it off your bucket list. Now I don't need to learn how to make a fire. Good. Now I know, you know, I do this all the time for myself, not for fire or learning how to sew. You know, I learn it to do what I do every day, to produce films, to make videos, make podcasts, to keep up with the technology, to improve how I'm able to communicate both visually and audibly. These are all things. It's a continual refinement process, and at no given time do I ever know everything that's going to go on. But I have a method to consistently deal with the unknown, to deal with fears, and to make progress out of what otherwise would be a panic situation for most people. And I think if there's some value that I can dispense. We're going to go with dispense. That would be it.
Well, you have plenty of it, and Rich, I mean, your site is just growing in leaps and bounds, and I mean, it's just gorgeous and loaded with so much information. And I think about how many changes you've had to make in your life since 9/11 happened. And you know,
yeah, but let's look at it this way. Look, I don't want to interrupt you, but for the benefit of your subscribers who are listening, because they're supporting you. You helped me to, you know, take it upon myself to create a website, to create a podcast. It was your actions that showed me, hey, it doesn't look too hard. If Maria can do it, I could do that too, right?
Right. Hey, thanks, Rich. Is that like supposed to be a compliment? Well, you know, when I started out, maybe there were a handful of people doing what I was doing. Today, I mean, you Google podcast, there's like a zillion people doing it. So I'd like to think that maybe a few people took their lead from me.
Oh, I think a lot of people took their lead from you, so don't you be bashful about that. You were there first doing it when no one else even thought that that was possible, so.
Yeah, well, I was going to try it out for a few months. So much for that plan. Rich, thanks so much for joining me today, and we'll talk again soon.
Maria, it was my pleasure, and thank you to everyone listening. Enjoy your day.